This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
It's back to reality as City host Arsenal in what some might call a must-win game. But will mounting injuries be City's kryptonite as we head into the business end of the season? It's Friday, March 28th. I'm Adam Booker.
I'm Ollie McCool.
I'm Alex Michel.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
What's here for Gundogan? It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe.
Welcome back to the City Report Podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Alex and Ollie are joining me today as we click back into gear after the slog that was the international break, particularly one this time of year. Before we get going here, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating and a review. That's the best way for us to get this show out to more Blues like you. We will be back releasing episodes next week, 5 days a week. Obviously, we've been on 3 days a week schedule during this international break, but regular scheduling will resume. We're going to get right into a preview of this weekend's Premier League clash with Arsenal. However, we'll look into some of City's injury issues, their record against the top six clubs this season. Little hint, it's fucking abysmal. But Ollie, first off, how are the nerves heading into this one? Because for me personally, it's been an international break, and an international break that did have some meaningful games. And I think because of that, I haven't really fully wrapped my mind around the magnitude of this game yet.
To be honest, you know, stuck football off an international break is so interesting. I think especially in March, because for me, I've just had 2 weeks where I just haven't cared about football. Like at all. I've paid attention to the England games just because I wanted to see who was playing, and that was about it. And then, you know, we had a big debate in our group chat about them. But frankly, I just don't. The thing is, coming off an international break is great because it's 2 weeks where I just haven't had to care about City. I've been able to detox away from it, not really care about football, care about other things, do other things. But then you log back in and you start feeling. Thinking about what's ahead, and then you realize, oh god, we've got however many injury issues that we're going to talk about. But at the same time, I don't want to sound cocky, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I'm going to, because I don't fear Arsenal. I've never feared Arsenal. I haven't feared Arsenal since about 2010, and even then, you know, we were so much better than them because we just nicked all their good players. Bought all their good players. And now what do? They buy our scraps, the ones we want rid of, and I just don't fear them. I don't see them as a mentally strong enough team to win the league. You know, I saw a great tweet the other day that was Arsenal coming to the Etihad is a bit like City going to Anfield. You know, they kind of start mentally 1-0 down.
I think the tweet you saw was me on this podcast saying exactly that.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it? Oh, okay. So someone nicked your quote.
Or they bought it off
me. Your, or they bought it off you. But yeah, if that's the case, I completely agree, because I just don't see how City, you know, I don't see how Arsenal really can put up that strong of a fight. You know, they got away with it at the Emirates almost. They nicked a goal at the end in a game in which City were awful and without Rodri. So I don't see, even with the problems that City are going to have to face injury-wise in this game, nerves-wise, it's a big game. It's a must-win game, and there's obviously some nerves around that. But for Arsenal, come on, let's be serious. We're going to have Robbie outside the fucking ground again going, we need to beat them. And we'll fucking batter them like we always do. It's the way things go. Arsenal fans get hyped because they think they can do it. And they never do. Q was losing 3-0 on Sunday now, but, you know, this is the world we live in on podcasts. We all say shit and sometimes it comes back to bite us. But I can't imagine any Arsenal fan is feeling confident, even seeing the news about our injuries. And I'm feeling pretty confident because we've got great players.
It's this constant like duality of being a City fan, is every single team that comes to play us is probably absolutely shitting down their leg. But we always have these reasons in our head why, you know, reasons for pessimism, especially people on this podcast. Alex, do you agree with Ollie, or are the nerves kind of jangling for you? Because I think if we see another one of those Arsenal fan TV motivational, almost King Leonidas-esque montages outside of the ground, then I'll be feeling pretty confident. But if they go into this like a serious team that I think they have been in large stretches of this season, anything could happen, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the nerves haven't really set in, at least yet for me. Mostly because of the international break. It's always weird coming back off that to one of the biggest matches of the season. I think if we had had a normal Premier League weekend this past weekend and had all the media buzz, I'd be feeling a lot different. I share some of the same sentiments in the sense that, like, I agree with the take that Arsenal coming to the Etihad is very similar to us going to Anfield. But at the same time, mostly because of how the big games this season have panned out for us, I just expect this to be a very painful watch. And that's not to say that I don't think we come away with 3 points or come away with the result, because I do. But last season, that 4-1, it just felt different than, like, going into that felt so much different than right now. Like, last season, I felt like Ollie, like, I felt like there's no way they're going to come to the Etihad and do anything against us this time. And right now, it's a little bit different. I think I have to give them a bit more credit just in terms of, like, they've gotten a bit better in terms of handling that. I do still agree that they're a young team, that they don't really have what it takes to, like, really pull through yet. But at the same time, it's more our side of the ball. We haven't been performing as well at home. Our great performances have just not come against the great teams. And for that reason, I just don't expect it to be, you know, a perfect watch for us on Sunday.
Well, it's worth mentioning, Ollie, that when you talk about that 4-1 from last season, the kind of shift in the momentum of the title race had already come and gone at that point. That was already at a time in which Arsenal could see City creeping up in the rearview mirror, and that game was basically just the icing on top of the cake. City were already going to catch and surpass them and win the league. I think that was already an accepted theory. Whereas this time around, it hasn't been City hunting Arsenal down and kind of reminding everybody why they're the, at that point, six times champions and had won two in a row and so on and so forth. Because at the moment, it's actually Arsenal have all the momentum. I think they're the only unbeaten team. Obviously, they lost in the Champions League to Porto in that first leg. I think they're the only unbeaten team in 2024 of all the Premier League teams. So the momentum is a bit different from last season.
Yeah, I think the more comparable game for City is when they went to the Emirates last season, you know, and it's obviously reverse way around with the fixtures, but, you know, that felt like that was where the momentum shift came. Even though City, you know, they went the next week and drew with Nottingham Forest, that game at the Emirates kind of shifted the momentum, because it kind of reminded Arsenal, okay, you're not as good as you think you are. And I just see that kind of being the same case. I didn't really consider Arsenal in the title race till a couple of months ago. To be quite honest, I thought it was going to be us and Liverpool all the way, and Arsenal have managed to kind of stay with both teams. You know, City have kind of struggled over the line in a few games in 2024. Liverpool have been their kind of usual selves, you know, incredible home record, getting the job done when needed. And obviously, you know, being in the Europa League gives them an easy schedule. But Arsenal, you know, they've had to fight for it a little bit more in 2024. It feels like they're the ones scrapping for the wins, scrapping themselves over the line. You know, you think of Kai Havertz at Brentford. You think of that Porto game, you know, there was comments after it that might be a momentum for them personally to kind of go on and do something this season. But I just think at the same time, if the Etihad, you know, gets rocking, which is its own kind of can of worms at the moment, especially. But if the Etihad kind of lives up to his reputation, I think they're just going to crumble. And, you know, Arsenal may go on after that and, you know, be unbeaten for the rest of the season. They may go win every game they've got left this season. But City will have been the ones to have got that win. And that's all they needed last season. You know, our record against the top nine away from home last season was the Emirates. Our record against the top six last season generally wasn't great. It's worse this season. But City have proven they're capable of pulling out just enough to go and get something. You know, even that performance at Anfield a few weeks ago, fucking abysmal. It was abysmal, and yet we still walked away with the point. You know, you're thinking of the two games against Man United. You absolutely trounced them off the pitch, essentially, in both of them. City can bring it. Whether they do is a different story. But you know, if they can't get themselves up for this, then consider us at the title race. Just consider us completely out of it. But if you can't get, you know, if it feels very much like Pep just needs to go and do that classic thing and just sit them all down and go, lads, it's Arsenal. Come on, look at our record against them. Just go and do that again. Just go and do that again. You'll be absolutely fine. Because that's the thing. I think if City go out and get the first goal within 10 minutes, Arsenal are just going to fall to shit and it'll end up being a 3-1 or a 4-1 or something again. As I said before, cue the 3-0 Arsenal win now. But
well, let's talk about that record in the big games this season that you brought up, because I was going to save this for part two of this episode, but I think we'll shift the injury talk to then and talk about the record now, because Alex, City have played six games against the current top six, and I don't mean the traditional big six, I mean the current top six of the Premier League. Their record in those games is 0 wins, 4 draws, and 2 losses. Those losses obviously came at the Emirates and at Villa Park. What is it that City are lacking in these big games, and are they lacking something, or is it just sheer dumb luck that they're not picking up victories? And ultimately, is it these games that, you know, not winning these games that could be the thing that stops them from winning the league?
I do think it's mostly luck. I think if you look on paper at how those games panned out from a sort of statistical point of view, I think putting aside Villa Park and putting aside the draw at Anfield, I think each of the rest of the games, unless I'm forgetting one, you can pretty much say that City outplayed the opposition. And I think in some of those, what we were simply lacking was the composure in the final minutes. I mean, you think back to Ruben's foul against Chelsea. Think back to Kulusevski dunking on Ake somehow. And if those two moments just right away turn around and don't happen, which they're pretty much anomalies, then I think we're looking back on it a lot more fondly, and obviously the title race is quite a bit more different right now. So I do think that it was mostly just sort of bad luck, and their City just had a few really poor moments that ended up defining, you know, that run in, what was it, December probably, and then, you know, overall defining the sort of narrative about us against the big six this season, because we haven't been as bad from a pure performance point of view. I do want to say one extra thing, which is that Pep has, in my opinion, sort of tested the players and perhaps added a bit more adversity than need be in certain moments, whether that be, you know, playing a bit more pragmatic than, and not really going for it, whether that be certain personnel choices. I mean, Alvarez and Akanji in midfield springs to mind. Whatever it may be, I don't think we've seen City in perfect form this season yet, and that's in part down to injuries, in part down to Pep's decision-making. And I think that has also held back City from not having, because alongside not coming out with results in these games, we also just haven't had that statement performance yet. And I think if we had one statement performance in there and the rest of the results were mixed, I think, again, our perspective is very changed. So for me, it's just a lot of things that are just very slightly out of favor that sort of pile up onto one another.
Yeah, I mean, typically it's about this time of year where City click into gear and you know, I guess we could say the cliche of go on one of those famous winning runs, but they've probably already done that this season. It's just not a winning run that put them kind of clear of the rest of the pack, because the rest of the pack have hung on, like Arsenal and Liverpool. So, Ollie, it brings me on to this question that has kind of been racking my brain for a bit, and it's kind of the, is this a must-win game discussion? Because we do have to come on to it. I feel like this is very much online discourse. But when you look at the table, you're a point behind Arsenal. And obviously, if you lose it, potentially catastrophic, because you have, you know, more than one match week that you're going to have to make up the points. But if you win this, it's that statement game that Alex has mentioned that maybe they've been missing all season and need right now, given the games that are, you know, around the corner. So what's kind of the momentum swing that comes from all of the different results here? Because I can't quite figure out personally if it feels like a game that City have to win.
A loss, that's when it's over. That's when you count City out completely, I think, because you can't go 4 points behind Arsenal. You know, never mind Liverpool and what they could do the rest of the season. You cannot go four points behind Arsenal. That's when it is completely over. A draw, it just feels like muddled for me, especially at home. Away, you'd probably take, if it was the other way around and, you know, we'd played the Etihad and got, you know, a standard 2-0 win in October or whatever, and it was the same situation, but going to the Emirates and you got a 1-1 or 2-2 or something, it's fine. You know, we'd be happy with that. But, you know, I was saying Anfield was a must-win game, which feels ridiculous to say about City going to Anfield, but it felt like must-win at the time. This is absolutely must-win for me. This is 100% must-win, because if you don't win, then it puts City in an incredibly difficult position chasing Liverpool, because they're probably going to win this weekend. Let's face it, they're Liverpool. They're really good. I don't even know who they're playing. I haven't looked, but you're expecting them to win. You're probably expecting them to go on and win most, if not all, of their games this season. We're relying on what a draw against a Spurs side or a United side to, you know, drop the points.
What I will say about that, though, is that in recent years, I've already mentioned this theory before. In recent years, in fact, all of the title races with Liverpool, it's never the games you expect them to drop points in.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
It's and last year with Arsenal, it was, what, Southampton at home, West Ham at home, who were struggling and dealing with, you know, European competition. So I think this year I've decided to be a big boy and say, I'm not going to look at the fixtures and say 3-3, 1-1, 3-3, because I think I'm just going to wait for the banana peel to come.
Oh, 100%. But I also think for City as well, this is a game they need to have a bit of an electric touch in. They need to put in that performance for themselves, if anything. You know, I don't think City need to be looking at the table just yet. They don't need to be kind of, you know, thinking of scenarios for the final day just yet. They need to be thinking, right, what can we do? What can we do here? If we go on and, you know, put Arsenal in the fucking ground, as they quite like doing, it seems, then it completely changes the narrative around Manchester City. That keeps us on track with Liverpool. I don't want to say it puts Arsenal out of the title race, but it probably puts them out of the title race. And then it becomes a two-horse fight between two teams, and we've chased Liverpool down before. You know, it's that simple. You don't want to call it a must-win, but I just think you have to say it is. And, you know, and I think maybe not having the media on them all week, like in a normal weekend, has probably helped them a little bit. They can just get back at their own pace, do their own thing. There feels like there's less pressure on this game, but City need to turn up, and they need to, you know, they need to walk away with 3 points at the Etihad here, especially because it's at home as well. You know, you want to keep the Etihad as a fortress, and that's the way you do it.
You know, coming off of the international break like this, it's pretty much just go from here on out. It's just go until the end of the season. These guys are not going to be thinking straight for, what is it, about 2 months from this point forward. They're just going to be playing one day, rehab the next day, training the next day, travel or prep the next day, and then play again. And it's just going to rinse and repeat over and over again. And the first match coming off of that, no matter who it's against, is so crucial, because that just starts the momentum for it all. If you come out of the international break like this in the run-in and you put in a five-star performance, that's going to set the tone for the rest of the season. If you come out and put in a half-assed performance and, you know, maybe we come away with 1 point, maybe it's a draw on Sunday, something like that, you can always turn it around. It's not out of the question, but it makes it so much more difficult to do that when, you know, Villa are coming to town 4 days after that or 3 days after that. It's just so difficult to handle that. And, you know, 3 points here just means so much, not even from the title race perspective, but just in terms of that momentum and setting the tone for the rest of the season.
Yeah, we asked the question before the international break, if it was a good or a bad time for this break to come. I think going into it, I was of the opinion that it was potentially a good time for City to kind of reset, maybe get Jack Grealish fit again, get Kevin De Bruyne fit again. And then the international break happened and we had some potentially catastrophic injuries, which we will talk about in part two. So stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Ollie, unfortunately, we have to come on to it. Obviously, during the international break, there was quite a few injuries. Now, we did have good news today as we are recording. This is Thursday evening UK time. Manuel Akanji, Ederson, Kevin De Bruyne, Mateus Nunes, and Jack Grealish all trained in full today. There's been varying reports on the level of fitness for all those players, but considering the almost dystopian feeling among City fans in the past few days, as players were kind of dropping like flies playing for their countries, we'll come on to John Stones and Kyle Walker in a moment, but the injury crisis that was perhaps maybe isn't as bad as we thought.
The biggest name there for me, it's not even Kevin De Bruyne, it's Jack Grealish. I just think what Jack Grealish adds to this side is like no other player we have in terms of where he plays on the pitch, what he adds to the team in that position. Having him back for this run-in is going to be huge. And, you know, City are going to be wary because they rushed him back the last time against Luton, I want to say. And, you know, he struck down with the same injury again. Obviously wasn't fit enough to start. Rushed him back too quickly. They won't want to do that this time. It seems like he's kind of more confident in himself. And it seems like there's a lot more positivity in the reports around him, which is great. Kevin De Bruyne, I mean, there was a report right before the international break that he had a little injury, so I don't think any of us really took it that seriously. Having him back at a good fitness level is fantastic. Ederson is obviously a huge one as well, because, you know, as good as Ortega is, as positive as he's been, it's a bit different when you're stepping in for multiple Premier League games, especially against the top six side in what we're now on this podcast referring to as a must-win game, and with the injuries to Stones and Walker, which we'll come on to separately, having a Kanji back is huge, because, you know, without him, then you're looking at Rico Lewis starting this game. And I love Rico Lewis. I'm Rico Lewis's number one fan on this podcast, probably in the Manchester City fan club generally, but against Arsenal at right back. That's a big task for any player, and you want someone with a bit more experience. And Akanji's performed in that role magnificently many, many times. So if it has to be him, then it has to be him. And I've got full trust in him. So hopefully he's fit to start, because it could get a bit dicey without him.
Well, let's come on to the bad news then, Alex. Ali obviously already mentioned that there, Kyle Walker and John Stones both weren't in training as of the time we're recording. Obviously, there is still 48 hours until the game. So who knows what can happen in that time, though it seems doubtful that either of them feature against Arsenal. If neither of them are, first of all, it doesn't leave Pep with many options as a back four, unless we're talking about the likes of Sergio Gomez and Rico Lewis stepping in. No, I'm not putting those two players on the same level before anyone gets violent in my DMs. But I think the back four kind of picks itself now, right, with what I guess Manuel Akanji, Ruben Diaz, Nathan Ake, Yasko Gavardi, all as your four senior center backs or fullbacks in this case. I would say I'm freaking out internally, but I've been kind of pining for the days of four center backs to play again.
I agree. Yeah. I think to touch on the Stones injury first, I don't think there's much more to say there besides A, what more do we expect at this point? And B, it's still tragic nonetheless. There's really not much more to add besides that. I just really hope he's fit and ready for the matches against Real Madrid, because I don't want to even consider watching those games without him on the pitch. But that's besides the point for the time being. And then, yeah, I completely agree when it comes to, you know, Kyle Walker's injury. Of course, I don't want to sit here and say, like, I wish injury upon Kyle Walker. I don't whatsoever. But at the same time,
you can, because a fair few amount of people have said it on this podcast.
No, I really don't. I'm actually one of, I've somehow become one of Kyle Walker's like biggest defenders amongst
me too. I am that group
within Twitter and stuff. But I completely agree. Like I've just been yearning to see us play with that. And some people will push back and say it was not the trouble winning defense, but it really was the trouble winning defense. Like in the most crucial games, you know, even when Kyle Walker was playing, he was playing as the outside center back in a back three, more or less. So I want to see us revert back to that, or at least to something that has a greater semblance of it than what we've seen so far. And this forces Pep into doing that. And probably, you know, it gives that opportunity and also gives that sort of momentum again, because let's say Kyle Walker is back for the Villa match, but it's sort of like that in-between zone. Pep probably sticks with a different system if he likes what he sees against Arsenal. So this could sort of switch things and change the gear for the rest of the season. Not really sure, but yeah, I do hope those guys can come back as soon as possible, because just given the volume of matches, we're going to need them simply from a rotation point of view.
Yeah, I think the big question, Ali, is, like I said, the back four kind of picks itself now, but with the Stones and Walker injuries, I think the domino effect probably comes further up the pitch. And, you know, going into the international break, particularly after the game at Anfield, there was all the discussion about how, you know, if you don't have Jack Grealish, you need to be playing Mateo Kovacic in with Rodri, and that gives Rodri a bit more license to step up and be a creator without fear of things breezing past him. So what does this mean for essentially the front six, seven ahead of that back four without Stones potentially stepping into midfield? Does it mean Manuel Akanji does it? Does it mean that Mateus Nunes and Kovacic are going to come in and try and plug things up in the middle? Or, you know, how do the dominoes fall as a result?
Yeah, all the talk of you don't need Kovacic if you've got Grealish, or if you don't need Grealish if you've got Kovacic, that kind of goes out the window without John Stones, because John Stones is the guy who makes that midfield idea work, where you can have Rodri roaming a bit more freely, you know, almost being that box crasher that Gundogan was last season. You know, that's what Rodri's role sort of has been at times, especially alongside John Stones, because he trusts him so much. You know, he trusts him to do a lot of the defending, doing that switch from centre back. So without John Stones, I think that's the effect. You're gonna need Kovacic, you're gonna need Grealish, and then that leaves you with a big decision: do you go Bernardo or do you go Phil Foden? Which is a very nice decision to have in some regards, because who wouldn't want two absolute world class players for one position? But it's going to be a very, very difficult one, because it's, do you go with the guaranteed control of Bernardo, or do you go with the output of Phil Foden, who's shown more and more that he can play that controlling role in midfield and further up the pitch from the wing, or coming inside from the wing? But for me, you know, as I said in my previous one, you know, you'd have to be the foolish one not to play Jack Grealish in this match now. You know, if you have John Stones, then, you know, you can maybe ease him back in and risk Doku, who can provide a lightning presence. But, you know, for this one, if I'm Pep, I'm thinking, right, I need to be as pragmatic as possible here. I need to get all my controllers in, because I do not want to be giving that ball up in midfield and leaving the defence dealing with the transition. Whether you've got a Kanji kind of inverting from right back, as we've seen in the kind of earlier days of that 3-2-2-3 system, with Rico and Stones especially. And we've seen Akanji step into midfield a hell of a lot this season. If he's going to be playing that role from right back, or if it's going to be some sort of amalgamation of the centre backs and just like Guardiola's a quasi left winger or whatever. You know, I'm saying all these words that probably don't make sense to some people, but this is kind of what you're dealing with when Pep Guardiola's got injury issues. You've got to think about it, right? How are we actually going to set up here? How are things going to work? But because so many of the players have such positional versatility. But I'd just be thinking control, because if you lose that ball to a Bukayo Saka or to a Gabriel Martinelli, they're going to get in behind, and then it's relying on your last ditch defending, which City can genuinely be very, very good at. But that is when they are most prone to make a mistake. That is when any team is most prone to make a mistake in last ditch defending, and you want to avoid that as much as possible in this game, because you don't have some of your best defenders out there.
Alex, let's try and piece together a starting 11, because I think there's question marks galore here. Ederson's back in training. Does he start?
I assume so, yeah.
Okay, me too. Right back, Manuel Akanji?
Yeah, based on what we know now, I would assume since he was in training on Thursday, the day we're recording this, he'll be fit. And then, yeah, the remaining three pick themselves, obviously.
Yep, so Ruben Diaz, Nathan Ake, Yasko Gvardiol. We'll move into midfield. Rodri is a guarantee. Does Kovacic come in? Does Nunez come in? Do we see what Pep has unfortunately done in most of the big games this season and play four attackers, a Doku, Foden, Bernardo, De Bruyne combination? Or is one of those attackers going to have to take a seat for a Kovacic or a Nunez?
Well, how I break it down pretty much is that Haaland, KDB, Foden, Bernardo and Rodri are more or less set in stone. I think, I know, Ollie, you had just said the potential for, you know, needing to decide between Bernardo and Foden on the wing if Kovacic and Grealish are both starting, but I don't expect both of them to start. I think those five guys are locked in. So it really is a matter of figuring out who that sixth man is. And I think I would probably go with Grealish. And part of the reason for that is because, like, to go back to the defense really quickly, like, the tricky thing that's going to happen here is recently against Arsenal in the past two or three games, City have played this sort of 2-4 buildup almost, where it's like the two center backs drop back and then the two fullbacks push on a bit, and there's an extra man in midfield to deal with when they go man-to-man pressing. Like, when we played in the Community Shield, that was Kovacic. When we played them in the league the first time, Rodri was out, so it was Bernardo and Kovacic, I believe. But you pretty much always need that man there. So that's either going to be Bernardo or Kovacic here. It pretty much has to be one of them. And then Vardiol and Akanji, like, the tricky thing with Akanji is you can't really invert him this game, because Ruben then would have to cover the wide area, and you don't want him doing that. And you still want to give Vardiol enough opportunity to push forward. So, like, that balance will sort of happen and won't be too skewed one way or the other, I don't think. And then it really is a matter of sort of where do you want Phil Foden? And, you know, I guess on top of that, you know, one option is Kovacic in midfield with Bernardo on the right wing. And I think that's a bit more pragmatic compared to, you know, playing Bernardo in midfield with either Grealish or Doku in the attack. And I don't think Alvarez really has a shot to start this one, because I think you need a left winger. And I think that experiment did not pass the test.
No, it did not. Ollie, so both of you guys have said that you see Jack Grealish starting and that's what you would prefer. And I think in a fantasy world, I would prefer Jack Grealish to start every big game. But given that he spoke after the injury and there was reports from within the City camp that they felt like they rushed him back too soon in that Luton game, and obviously I think he only lasted 15-20 minutes, is there not a fear of doing that again when he's only just joined full training again and you know, this is obviously a big game. We've all sat here and labeled it a must win game, but you still got Real Madrid. You've still got Aston Villa in a few days. You've still potentially got Champions League semifinals. You've still potentially got, you know, games you have to win in the Premier League down the stretch. You've got an FA Cup semifinal at Wembley against Chelsea to potentially set up a Manchester Derby FA Cup final for the second straight season. So looking at the bigger picture, is there any sort of risk in starting Jack Grealish in this game, given that there may be 10 to 12 quote unquote bigger games down the stretch?
I mean, without seeing his medical reports, we can't say for certainty. I mean, that's a given, but I think it needs said. Everything we say in relation to Jack Grealish for this game has to be prefaced with that. But I think you know he's been training at the training ground for a couple of weeks with the 23s with Kevin De Bruyne as they both make their way back. It seems like he's ready to go. It seems like from the reports we're hearing, we're not hearing that they're being tentative. We're not hearing that he's still working through issues. We're hearing he's training in full. Everything's going fine. Everything is as normal. For me, that says he's ready to start. That doesn't mean he has to play the whole 90 minutes. I think this is one, regardless, if he starts this game, you don't want to have him out there for the whole 90 minutes. You're going to have to make a change at some point. And I think you can kind of get away with that with the other players we have available, you know, whether that is, you know, not starting, say, Kovacic and, you know, you start with Grealish, Foden and Bernardo, and then you bring on Kovacic and change the system and change the formation. That's fine. But you can't have, I don't think you can risk playing Grealish 90 minutes here. But the problem with Grealish is he's not someone you want to really bring on to win a match. He's not someone you want to bring on to, maybe to preserve a lead, but he's not someone you kind of bring on as a match winner. He's someone you start to win you the match and then you change him out and let someone else kind of go at a tired defender like a Doku would, or, you know, you let someone else shut the game down in midfield. So for that reason, I think it's worth the potential risk. And I think City hopefully, and I think City's medical department will have hopefully learned from what happened at Luton and think, right, okay, we rushed him back that time. If he's not 100%, we're not starting. We're not clearing him to start. We're not saying he's ready to go. Because they, you know, as you said, the bigger games that we got coming up, you know, even without progression in the Champions League or progression in the FA Cup, there's still some fucking huge games in this run to come. So we've got to be careful, because as much as I respect Jeremy Doku, as much as I appreciate his talents and appreciate his ability, I don't want to see Jeremy Doku starting against Real Madrid. I don't want to see Jeremy Doku starting in an FA Cup semi-final. I don't want to have that risk. I don't want to be running that risk where he has to become our number one guy who has to deliver.
Yeah, I think, though I'm just a lowly host, my two cents is that Grealish doesn't start this game. I think back to right before the international break, obviously City played the FA Cup quarterfinal against Newcastle. Kevin De Bruyne didn't start that game. Jeremy Doku did start that game. John Stones did not start that game, but Mateo Kovacic did start that game. And that was a game in which the general consensus among City fans and pundits alike was that was kind of the old City. They had that control, and they made Newcastle look like boys, essentially, that put up little to no fight. So I could see Pep taking a page out of that book and saying, well, let's get Kovacic in there. And if we need Grealish, we can call on him. If we get an early lead, we can call on Grealish in the back half of the game and try and slow things down and preserve that lead. But I think if we've learned anything from that game against Newcastle and the game against Liverpool previously, it's that Kovacic might just be your kind of wild card in the last few weeks of the season. But though I am just a lowly host, as I said, we're going to end it there and we're going to do some quick trivia to get out of here, because even though we had a full trivia episode just a few days ago, it is the international break. And as I'm hosting, we're going to absolutely do some trivia. Now, I don't think this is too difficult, because I think you can get away with guessing in a lot of these. However, Arsenal have not beaten City at the Etihad since 2015. I believe Santi Cazorla and Olivier Giroud scored on that day. In all of the home games since, City have won all but one. They drew 2-2 on one occasion. In the Premier League, this is. Can you name me, you guys are going to switch off one by one until either you run out of options or you can't think of one. Can you name me the goal scorers from those games against Arsenal? Now I will say there is two players that scored five. There's a player that scored four and two players that scored two. So the list is only 11 players that have scored in those eight games. Ali, I'm going to give you the floor first. Just name me goal scorers that have scored against Arsenal in home Premier League games since the loss in 2015.
De Bruyne.
Correct. That is one of the players with five goals. So De Bruyne is fully off the board now.
The ultimate Arsenal hater.
Correct. Alex?
Haaland.
Correct.
Oh, God. Who else scored in that game? Sterling?
Sterling has four, correct?
I was going to say he's got a few.
Aguero's got to be there.
Aguero had five, yep, including one hat trick.
Are these just games at the Etihad? Or is it games...
Just games at the Etihad, yep.
Oh, God. So Haaland, Aguero, De Bruyne, Sterling have gone. Jesus.
Gabriel Jesus had two. There's six players left on the board.
Wow.
I'm split between two names in my head. I'm scared to say one of them. I'm going to go Leroy Sané.
Correct. Leroy Sané has scored once.
Oh, God.
There's one more player on the board that has scored twice, and I'll give you a hint. It was in the same game.
Oh, that doesn't
help. So this player has scored a brace against Arsenal. A brace. And I will tell you, it is not obvious.
It's not obvious. Oh, God, that makes it even worse.
It's not obvious.
I don't know if this is the player we're referring to, but I'm gonna guess David Silva.
Incorrect.
What?
All right, a chance to steal it, Alex. You can name one of five players. One of these players has scored a brace against Arsenal to win the round.
I've got a few names floating in my head because there are some relatively obvious, but I still can't place the specific goals. I mean,
all the wins against Arsenal are just so forgettable, aren't they? Because they just happen every time.
They have been. And the game in which his player scored a brace was a 5-0, I believe. So
I have one now. I'm pretty damn sure I remember now. Rodri.
Correct.
Rodri.
Yes.
Can I... Are you going back?
Do you guys?
I want to keep going. You want to keep going?
All right. So Alex is the winner, but we'll go into for funsies extra time.
See if we
How many more do we have? Four.
Four players left.
There's four, including the player that had a brace. Yeah, Ollie, I'll give you a go. Name one player.
So what? Yeah, Sterling, Sané have gone. Jesus Aguero have gone. Haaland's gone. Rodri's gone. Surely Foden's got a goal against them.
Foden has one goal, correct?
Yeah, I was going to say he's got at least one.
Three players left.
Yeah, the names that are floating around in my head, there's definitely a defender goal somewhere in there. I want to say, like, this isn't my guess. I'm just, like, thinking out loud here to give a bit more, like, listening value here. Like, I feel like Akanji at some point got a goal against Arsenal, but I can't remember. There has to be a defender goal somewhere in there. Grealish comes to mind, but I'm pretty sure that his goal against them was the goal that gave us the win away. I'm not sure he scored. I'm still struggling to think about who scored the fourth goal last season in the 4-1. Mahrez is there in my head because of penalties mostly. And then I feel like there was someone else on the tip of my tongue. But I think my guess, mostly just down to penalties, would be Mahrez.
Incorrect.
Has John Stones got one, or was that at the Emirates?
John Stones scored the fourth last season, he's the player you were missing from last season.
Yeah, I was going to say so he was the defender.
You're missing two players. One is a bit more likely than the other, but both of these players scored in the 5-0. I believe it was the 2021-22 season from the famous game where Kyle Walker and Ruben Diaz were pictured standing over Kieran Tierney. If that, if that is jogging any sort of memories for you.
Did Gundogan get a goal in that one?
Gundogan did get a goal. I believe he got the opener in that game, a back post header.
Because that was classic Mr. Whippy.
Yes. So a player got a brace in that game.
We still haven't got
Give you guys a hint. Ollie's
is it Bernardo?
Guess, it's not Bernardo. Ollie's guess of David Silva was on a correct path.
Oh, Ferran Torres.
Correct. That was Ferran Torres' little purple patch when we all said, we don't need a striker. We can put Gabriel Jesus out wide. Ferran Torres is the future striker of this club. And then he was gone within about 3 weeks.
Someone had got that off the bat before, that would have been crazy.
I keep forgetting he was a City player, to be honest. But what a guy. Yeah. What a guy. That like little purple patch was one of the best like little purple patches we've had at City, I think. I thought he was like...
It was an exciting time. Yeah.
I genuinely thought he was going to be like the next big thing, and then he just fucked off to Barca.
Yeah, where he's been slightly irrelevant for a couple of seasons. So everybody won in that scenario. That'll do for us today. Ollie, thank you very much.
No problem at all. Thank you very much. Let's hope we beat these sods on Sunday.
Absolutely. Alex, thank you.
Yep, thank you. Same sentiment here. I hope I'm coming back onto my pod appearance next week with a big smile on my face.
As do we. Listeners, thank you very much. As I said, we will be back on Monday with our regular 5 days a week, so we look forward to getting back on track. Until next time, see you later.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end-of-season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.